So, Walter, we look forward to your prayer to begin our time of worship. May we spark in our minds this hour imagination to see the world afresh. Open our hearts to the newness of each moment. Find humor where we are too serious, and joy where we have forgotten ourselves. So keep those hymnals handy. Our opening hymn is number 2 in the gray hymnal, Down the Ages We Have Trod. And since this is a bit unfamiliar to our congregation, I'd like Walter to play through entirely, and we'll join in when he comes back in. Please rise in body or spirit. First message, please turn to number 657 and join me in an antiphonal reading by Sophia Foss. I'll read the regular typeface and you can read the italicized. So again, that's number 657 in the back of your gray hymnal. The hymnals are getting a workout this morning. Some beliefs are like walled gardens. They encourage exclusiveness and the feeling of being especially privileged.
Other beliefs are expansive and lead the way to wider and deeper sympathies.
Some beliefs are like shadows, clouding children's days with fears of unknown calamities.
Other beliefs are like sunshine, blessing children with the warmth of friends.
Some beliefs are divisive, separating the saved from the unsaved, friends from enemies.
Other beliefs are bonds in a world community where sincere differences unify.
Some beliefs are like blinders, shutting off the power to choose one's own direction.
Other beliefs are like gateways, opening wide vistas for exploration.
Some beliefs weaken a person's selfhood. They blight the growth of resourcefulness.
Other beliefs nurture self-confidence and enrich the feeling of personal worth.
Some beliefs are rigid, like the body of death, impotent in a changing world.
Other beliefs are pliable, like the young sapling, ever growing near the upper crust.
Thank you. Kimberly asked me to share a poem that was read at the GA this summer that she found especially moving, and I think you will too. God is no noun, and certainly not an adjective. God is at least a verb, and even that shrinks her. God is not so much a woman as she resides in the improbable hope of brown mothers. God is not so much a man as he is at work in the memory of my grandfather's laugh. God is not trance. God swims in the tears of the one who sees her real self at long last in the bathroom mirror. God is not black, neither is he white. God is waiting in the contradiction of songs from slave shacks, and I have seen God in the alabaster smiles of children at play. We're getting Michelangelo all wrong. God is not the bearded one surrounded by angels, floating over the Sistine. He is not Adam with his muscled back pressing the earth. No, God is the closing inch of space between their reaching fingers. Don't believe for a moment that God is Catholic. For God's sake, he isn't even human. Have you heard the wood thrush when the sun glistens on the Huron? Can you see the flowers, how they speak to bees without a word? Still, God is no spring blossom, no wood thrush. God is neither the sun nor the bee. God is what you see in the blossom. God is when you hear the river and suddenly discover how much of it is part of you. To be clear, God is not you. God is somewhere in the 14 billion years which have come to mean that you are. God is, after all, at least a verb. She is neither Pharaoh's rod nor Moses' staff. We must be the ones to cease our slavery. She is not interested in blame, neither does she offer praise. Truth and gratitude are ours to breathe. She will not have your answers. She's too large for answers. She dances too wildly to be fastened to them, and answers are nouns anyway. God is at least a verb, twirling in the radiant reds of spring blossoms, singing in the rare silences between rapid opinions, attending the tears of dark-skinned deaths, learning in tiny alabaster smiles. God is waiting in the space between fingers that might connect. He is waiting for us to stop naming her. She is waiting for us to see all of him. God is waiting to be unshrunk. Please remain seated as we enter into a time of meditation. And to begin that meditation period, we're going to be singing and listening to the hymn Wayaya, which is number 1020 in the Teal Hymnal. And Reverend Kimberly is going to help us learn this this hymn and guide us.
I grab this. Aha, it works. So I'm told this is unfamiliar to most of you. So I'm gonna teach you the chorus, and I'll sing the verse, and we'll do the chorus again. And if you're comfortable singing the verse with me the second time, we can. But the chorus is very simple. Repeat after me. Wo ya ya.
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 Very good. We are going. Heaven knows where we are going. But we know within. And we will get there. Heaven knows how we will get there, but we know we will. It will be hard, we know, and the road will be muddy and rough, but we'll get there. Heaven knows how we will get there, but we know we will. We are going, heaven knows where we are going, but we know within, and we'll get there. Heaven knows how we will get there, but we know we will. It will be hard, we know, and the road will be muddy and rough, but we'll get there. Heaven knows how we will get there, but we know we will.
We are going, whether we want to or not. Woyaya, heaven knows where, despite our best planning. Woyaya, we know we will, because there is something that calls to us. Woyaya, it will be hard, sometimes harder than we wish it to be. Woyaya, but we'll get there. Together, we will get there. Despite our differences, we will get there. Despite our personal struggles, we will get there. We, together, will get there. Woyaya. Many things would be a whole lot easier if we lived in the Star Trek universe. Travel, food preparation, medical treatment, travel. Did I mention travel? And of course, communication. You see, in the Star Trek universe, it is important to be able to communicate with sentient beings from other planets and galaxies. In English, of course. And thus, Gene Roddenberry created a universe where everyone is implanted with a universal translator. Rarely does anyone, not Kirk, Picard, or Janeway, encounter another culture without being able to speak their language. But even so, in the Star Trek universe, there are communication problems, not with the words themselves, but with how those words are used. In my favorite episode, Darmok, from The Next Generation, the Enterprise encounters the Tamarians, whose words are intelligible, but whose meaning is baffling. Sentences like Darmok with his sails unfurled, and Mirab and Jalad across the ocean make up the entirety of their discourse. As you can imagine, the crew is baffled. And Captain Picard is even more so when he is stranded on a planet with their leader. But eventually, they come to realize that the Tamarians speak exclusively in narrative imagery. Their meaning, oh, I love fall allergies. Their meaning is deeply enmeshed in their narrative. As the crew of the Enterprise discover, it is analogous to us saying something like Juliet on her balcony. It portrays an image of youthful romance. But if you don't know the Shakespearean play or its use in Western culture, you would not understand. Darmok and Jalad across the ocean. We run into the same problems when we talk about religion, particularly when we talk about God. how handy it would be to have a universal translator so we could move from church to church, from theologian to theologian, from congregant to congregant, from song to song, and know exactly what the narrative imagery behind the word God really is in that instance, and how that narrative imagery informs faith and their actions. Well, sadly, despite many great strides in science and technology that are bringing us ever closer to the Star Trek universe, we don't have universal translators yet. So we have to rely on some more primitive means of understanding for some of these ideas. Primitive ideas like a sermon. Now, some of you may already be a little antsy. First, you may wonder what this has to do with participating in the universe, and trust me, we'll get there. But others of you may feel there's maybe already a little too much God talk. Yes, I will be using the word God quite a bit today. But here's the first piece for your universal translator. When people like me talk about God in Unitarian Universalist circles, we're often using that word as shorthand for a particular aspect of belief. You may want to translate that word into your own language: creator, spirit of life, the divine, holy one, infinite, the collective unconscious, whatever makes sense to you. But I'll use the word God as we look at some of the aspects, the narrative imagery, if you will, of the divine. And it's important what we're about to do. Having this universal translator doesn't just connect us to other religious cultures like Muslims or pagans, Hindus, or even Methodists. It connects us to the people sitting next to us with their own beliefs about the divine. It connects us to our own sometimes contradictory ideas about God. And it connects us to our Unitarian Universalist tradition. It allows us, as Rebecca Parker says, to enter a theological house that has already been built, a theology of heritage, of a tradition, of a community. And because that house contains a plurality of beliefs, we can't necessarily know, even from one hymn to the next, exactly what image of God we're singing about or what that image means. So let's take a little time and figure out exactly that, what the songs in our hymnals have to say about the Unitarian Universalist ideas about God. Now, keep your hymnal nearby. We'll be flipping around. We'll be using the gray hymnal. We'll be looking at some verses of some various songs. And this is, of course, one instance where looking at the hymnal during the sermon will not be frowned upon. So let's begin. We've already sung Down the Ages We Have Trod, which is kind of a survey of God imagery in our movement. Among the things we learned is that some think God is a being throned above, ruling over us in love. And that's what we might call transcendent, the aspect of God's nature and power which is wholly independent of and removed from the material universe. This is an all-powerful, all-knowing, always-present God whom some turn to for something greater than themselves. This is the God of Robert Browning, God's in his heaven, all's right with the world. This is the God of Islam, a single and absolute truth that transcends the world, a unique and indivisible being who is independent of the entire creation. This is the God found in some forms of Hinduism. Brahman is supreme, he is self-luminous, he is beyond all thought. We see the transcendent God in Judaism and Christianity, a parent figure who exists outside the realm of natural occurrence. And it is this aspect that Unitarians and Universalists inherit from our Protestant forebears, including Martin Luther himself. We find Luther's most famous hymn in our hymnal, number 200. I encourage you to turn to it. The mighty fortress is our God. You can stay seated. And we'll just sing the first verse.
The
Now, it might seem that modern Unitarian Universalists wouldn't be very into that God. Yet, given the frequency of references to the transcendent God in our hymnal, we still clearly value this idea within our faith tradition. It is certainly in our history. Notable 19th century Unitarian minister William Ellery Channing believed that God was first and foremost beyond humanity and beyond nature. But this kind of God seems not terribly interested in what we do in the world or how we participate in it. This transcendent God seems more interested in creed than deed. So let's look at a different idea, one that seems much more interactive and is very likely familiar to many of you, particularly those who are fans of Emerson. This is the immanent God. Now, to be clear, this is not eminent as in a notable or imminent as in foreboding. Spelled with an A, immanence, is the divine presence seen in the material world, the God that permeates the mundane. It is also the God that inhabits the material in visceral ways. It is the God we saw in down the ages, the present Godhead own where creation's laws are known. It is the God that sometimes makes the choice to come to church difficult when nature beckons for its own communion. Now, I will confess that I tend to be more at home in an air-conditioned coffee shop than a breezy mountaintop. Yet this idea of an immanent God is quite helpful, especially when we're confronted with less than hospitable attitudes toward the earth. We need to remember that some out there actually believe that we are simply visitors on this planet, and that stewardship of the earth is not part of our call as human beings. But as eco-theologian Sally McPhee points out, we are earthlings. We belong to the earth. Because Unitarian Universalists, I understand the idea of an immanent God who inhabits the very earth itself. We see ourselves as part of, not separate from, the interdependent web. And we sing about it quite emphatically. In hymn number 317, we are not our own. Again, we'll look at the first verse. This connection to the earth and this immanent God in some of our favorite hymns. For the earth forever turning, and the wide universe is the ocean I travel, and the earth is my blue boat home. Even more, we find that the immanent God leads us to broader connections. In her book, Fluent in Faith, Jean Harrison Nuyar suggests that the immanence of God and nature actually directs us to move beyond material realities to the meaning of life and love, to the truth that there is more beauty and care in this world than we can comprehend or capture in our scientific explorations. Now, on their own, these two ideas of God are fascinating, mind-blowing, and good Unitarian Universalist theology. There's another idea of the divine, one that begs us to participate in the universe. It is an idea that is in some ways fairly new, but can be seen as the deep foundation of our theological house. This is the God of process theology. Now, this aspect of the divine can be called the creating creator God, the relational God, the dynamic God, the responsive God, the big picture God, the persuasive God, the changing God. There are so many names that we struggle to pin it down, largely because of what this process idea is all about. Now, scientists and engineers among us are going to like this next bit, because process thought begins with Einstein. Now, more specifically, it begins with a mathematician named Alfred North Whitehead, who was fascinated with Einstein's work, and in particular, quantum physics, where we see that everything is in motion. Everything, from the biggest bodies of mass to the tiniest quark, is in motion. It turns out that everything we thought was fixed, stable, and solid is actually vibrating, changing, and shifting. Whitehead realized that this didn't just apply to the physical world, but to the metaphysical world as well. And he developed a philosophy that proposed that events are the discrete base of reality, not matter. Essentially, the core of Whitehead's philosophy is, if it seems static, don't trust it. Soon, process philosophy found a home in theological circles. Charles Hartshorne, bless your heart, and John Cobb realized that if everything was an ever-changing event, then surely God and all of creation was equally ever-changing. Instead of a transcendent God above us, creating the rules but not in the world, or an immanent God present in the material world but not acting with us, then this God is as mutable as the quark, at once a vibration and a particle. This God, like us, is always being created, is always creating, is always happening. This God, like us, is eternally becoming, eternally participating in the universe. As Glenn Thomas Rideout wrote in the poem, that God is a verb, becoming, creating, relating, participating. Now, in Unitarian Universalist thought, our ideas of God or the divine or the collective unconscious, the universe, the infinite, is one of benevolence. God is good and wants what's best for us. Thus, when we apply process thought, we find a God who isn't controlling us, but is inviting us to imagine, to grow, to dream, to create, enticing us toward goodness and wholeness. This God invites us to be architects, as we see in hymn number 288, All Are Architects. Again, we'll sing the first verse. Process thought, time is not linear. Instead, it is unfolding in many directions all at once, each new moment ripe with the possibility to participate. We are always making choices, small and large. When applied to our faith's call to action, we know that our choices lead us to fight for economic justice, reproductive rights, immigration reform. Our choices lead us to follow this call from Jesus in the Gospel of Matthew. I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you took care of me. I was in prison and you visited me. Like the immanent God, the creating creator God calls us to action. To come build a land where we'll bind up the broken. And I'll bring you hope when hope is hard to find. And till there is peace and love for us and everyone, we'll take one more step. We hear this call in hymn number 6, Just As Long As I Have Breath. Once again, one verse. When we embrace the idea that we are not just experiencing God in all living things, and not just experiencing God as a big, eternal, separate idea, but are experiencing God as a co-creative force, calling us into communities of well-being, we see a God that is a living whole, of which you and I and others in this cosmic conversation are active parts and partners. In a participatory universe where we all have a role in the construction of reality, God participates in all life and every act of creation. And in turn, we must participate too. Einstein, remember him? Put it this way. A human being is part of the whole called by us universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts, and feeling as something separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison, by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. And we see our place in the whole of the universe, reflected in hymn number 22, Dear Weaver of Our Lives' Design. First read about process theology, I felt as though the universe opened up to me with a resounding yes. For the first time, I discovered there was a theology that matched what I believe and what many Unitarian Universalists believe. It jives with our Unitarian belief in human potential and reason as our way toward truth and meaning. It jives with our Universalist belief in universal goodness and love, which propels us to serve our human family. As Nuyar says, process thinking affirms many of the threads in our theological heritage. She writes, we are a part of the interconnected web of life in which each affects all. There is a sacred spark, a spiritual energy and power in each of us. It matters what we do with our lives. The great, ultimately unnameable mystery of life is a call to goodness and love. As we choose love, decide for love, stand on the side of love, we are part of the growing God in the universe. This, she concludes, is process theology made real. This creating creator God affirms our long-held belief in goodness and the progress of humanity. We find this in James Freeman Clarke's affirmation of the progress of humankind onward and upward forever. In the early 20th century, John Dietrich, considered the father of religious humanism, spoke of a cosmic theism, which interprets God as the indwelling power in the universe rather than an individual separate power. No wonder this God, this creating creator, relational, dynamic, responsive, big picture, changing, becoming God is so familiar. And our hymnal shows it. The Center for Process Studies did an extensive review of a variety of hymnals from a variety of traditions. Ours, along with hymnals from the United Methodist Church, the United Church of Christ, the Disciples of Christ, and so on. And they named for our hymnal 349 out of 414 hymns as representing this creative, creating God. That's 85%. And that's just singing the living tradition. That's not even our teal hymnal singing the journey. This God is an artist who reminds us, as Arthur Graham says, that each of us is an artist whose task it is to shape life into some semblance of the pattern we dream about. The molding is not of self alone, but of shared tomorrows and times we will never see. This God encompasses the transcendent and the immanent and brings us into deep relationship with the wide universe. This is the God who reminds us that everything evolves. Not just life forms, but thought and ethics and understanding and relationships. This is the God who reminds us that truth and revelation are not static, but are forever unfolding. This is the God who reminds us to be open to the eternal now, to be open to always becoming. This is the God who persuades us gently with love and compassion and the promise of a new day. This is the God who accompanies us as God accompanies all creation on this journey. This is the God at the heart of our universal translators. This is the Unitarian Universalist narrative image for God. This is the God I pray to when I sing, "Our world is one world. What touches one affects us all." And when I sing, "When we live in deep assurance of the flame that burns within, then our promise finds fulfillment and our future can begin." It's even the God I sing to when I sing, "Wo-ya-ya, wo-ya-ya." This relational God demands our participation on this journey of life. And as Teresa of Avila said, the feeling remains that God is on the journey too. We live in a participatory universe. We do not leave things up to a remote God. We act with the divine energy. We too create out of mystery. We share in the opportunity and responsibility of creating reality. We are all artists, creators of what is and what is becoming. And it is this God, this spirit that tells us to do. So let's close with hymn number 1024, "When the Spirit Says Do Please Rise." We'll sing a few verses.
Got to do when the Spirit
Benediction. We'll read them together now. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community,
or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.
Please remain standing and hold hands or touch a shoulder of those near you for our closing words. May the love which overcomes all differences, which heals all wounds, which puts to flight all fears, which reconciles all who are separated, be in us and among us, now and always. Blessed be.